It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. Thank you to you for listening. You're each treasured, valued. You have purpose. Today, strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. You were made for this time. And thank you to this team that I work with. That's producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. Producer Steve, we've got a great show planned for everyone today. We're going to be talking with a patriotic historian, a former Army Ranger, West Point grad, Ben Martin, about the American Revolutionary War. And I think with all that's going on out there and current events, it's really, I think it's a gift to revisit our history as we are working to reclaim our American heritage, Steve.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And I've already talked with Ben this morning. He's chomping at the bit, raring to go. So I guess the best thing we could do is just get out of his way.
I think so. There's just a few things I wanted to talk about before we get over here to Ben Martin. First of all, be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. And sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You'll get first look at all of our upcoming guests, our most recent op-eds, our most recent podcasts. And what we had last week was great. We rolled out Alan Thomas, his op-ed. When to call it quits. And then also we did a great podcast with Wisconsin Representative Tim Rantham. And he's talking about election integrity. And that is a very excellent podcast as well. So be sure and check that out. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Thank you to all of you who support us. And currently on the website is our voter's guide. And on that, we have gone through the three statewide questions very thoroughly. We've come up with recommendations. We hope this will be a good tool for you as you complete your ballot. Typically, these off-year elections are very low turnout elections. And as I look at these different school board races, these different city council races, my friends, if we don't show up and vote, there is something very dangerous that is happening in Colorado right now, and actually nationwide, and it is this Working Families Party. And somebody brought this to our attention. Leanne, thank you so much for doing that. And looking at their website, they say they are dedicated to upholding progressive values through direct action and electoral victory. Their mission is to empower people, organizations, and communities to build a multiracial and feminist populist movement that strengthens democracy and advances racial, social, and economic justice. And
how many red flags can you put in one disclaimer?
And they actually have candidates. They are trying to take over Lakewood City Council, as well as some of these other races here in Colorado. And so it's really, really important to take a look at it. They have named their candidates there. And so it's good for you to go and take a look at that and vote the opposite way. If you're going to look at a voter's guide the other way, that would be a way to take a look at voting the opposite way. And as we were coming into the show, when I said, if you can't have equal rights, if you have special rights. So if there are special rights for women, or based on race, or based on sexual orientation, or whatever that is, if there are special rights that carve that out, then there can't be equal rights. And America was founded on this idea that we are all equal, and that we have these rights from God of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. So the Working Families Party does not match up with the American idea. And just wanted to make sure that we made that that distinction. Wanted to jump over, Steve, to our quote for today. And this is Nathaniel Green. Since we're going to have Ben on and talking about the Southern Campaign Part 2 of the Revolutionary War, I thought it would be great. And I actually get really great hope from Nathaniel Green's quotes here. He was a major general of the Continental Army in the American Revolutionary War. He emerged from the war with a reputation as General George Washington's most talented and dependable officer, and is known for his successful command in the Southern Theater of the War. Nicknames are the Savior of the South, the Fighting Quaker. He was born in 1742. He died in 1786. And this is what he said. He said, "I am determined to defend my rights and maintain my freedom or sell my life in the attempt." I mean, these guys were, these were dedicated guys, Producer Steve.
Well, they knew what was at stake. And, well, I mean, I just wish whatever percentage of this nation I could think to come up with was as aware of what's really happening and the potential for disaster right around the corner. So today's quote coupled with yesterday's quote from Abraham Lincoln, I just hope people are appreciating what you're putting out there.
Well, I do hear from many people, and I know that listenership continues to grow. So tell people about the show as well. Just wanted to run through a couple of things here. You had mentioned there's a whole bunch of vaccine stuff that we'll talk about probably a little bit later on in the week, because I want to get to Ben here. But there were a couple of things that aren't funny but are funny. And one of those, Steve's, was the job fair out at DIA.
I just about fell out of my chair in this one. I don't say fell out of my chair laughing. It just took me totally by surprise. There's 1,000 jobs open that need to be filled. They set up a job fair and were anticipating 5,000 people, and 100 showed up. Now, what does this say?
What does this say? There's a big messages going on here, and this take out the personalities of Donald Trump and Joe Biden and look at the policies. Before the COVID-19 Wuhan, China virus reaction disruption, this economy was humming. And now look at this. People aren't working. People aren't showing up for these jobs here. And I think a lot of that has to do also with not only the fact that there's been paying people to not work, but also with these vaccine mandates. And I really think that in a way this is a very interesting statement. So let's stay tuned and just think about this. DIA, there's 1,000 jobs out there. Just think about the quality of service out at DIA. If you have 1,000 jobs that need to be filled, and you had 100 people show up, just think what's that going to do? But we're going to go over to Ben Martin early. Because, Steve, when you and I were talking on our pre-call, and we're always, there's so much information when Ben's on, is let's talk about some of the similarities of what was happening back around the American Revolutionary War and what's happening now, and get Ben's perspective on that. So, Ben Martin, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here. How's everything going there, Kim?
Well, it's going well. However, when Steve and I were talking, Steve mentioned it about people being asleep, people not paying attention, people not understanding the peril our country is in right now. But back in the Revolutionary War, there were some similarities, weren't there? I mean, were there people that they had sympathies towards the British? Talk to us a little bit about that, Ben.
Well, you know, when we started the war, we had about, the country was divided in the thirds, if you would. You know, you had a third of the American people were loyalists to the British. You know, that was their mother country. And so they were called the Tories then, or loyalists. That's what they were basically called most of the time. You know, the polite things they were called anyway. And then you had about a third of the people that were very patriotic. And then you had a third of the people that were kind of undecided in between. It's not too different from the way things are, I think, in a normal society like they are today. You know, that's what they normally say. You're about a third and a third and a third. And the middle third, you know, which way they go is what normally determines the results of an election, except when people cheat.
And you call them a third undecided back then. They're probably a third unaffiliated now. Do you think, Ben, that back around the Revolutionary War, people were more engaged with the issues that were facing them, or or do you think that's about the same as today now?
Oh, no. I mean, it was entirely different back then from everything. The people were well-read. They were well-educated. They didn't have a smartphone. They didn't have TV. They carried papers in their pockets. Most of them didn't even have a lot of books at home, except for many of our founders and framers that were very well educated and very well read. But the normal household back then had, if they had one book, it was the Bible. If they had two books, the second most popular book was Plutarch's Lives. And so they were studying, they were learning, but they paid a lot of attention to what was happening in politics and what they were being given in their newspapers. In fact, the Constitution, most people didn't have a little Constitution that you can put in your pocket like we have today. Most of them carried the Constitution around as it appeared in the newspapers when they first got it, and they folded up newspapers. And if you go back and you listen to some of the accounts back then, they were really surprised when they went into a tavern or when they went into a tea house. There were always people sitting around taking out unfolding those pieces of paper that had the Constitution on it, and they were discussing it. They were arguing about it, and they knew what their representatives were doing, and they really stayed on top of them. It wasn't anything. It's not like today where they're out in Washington, D.C., and you never get to see them. I mean, they didn't meet all year. Most of the time they spent back in their home area, except during the war when they spent most of their time in Congress trying to do things to help the war effort. But, it was one of those things where people would go, they were just amazed to see how our people, our founders, the people that were in charge of the different communities and stuff like that, stayed on top of what was happening in politics.
You know, Ben, yesterday, as I've looked, I've taken a stand against two tax issues. One in my hometown, which is a proposed 55% increase in the retail sales tax, and then also a stand against this new marijuana tax, quote unquote, for the children. And right. As I've looked at this, I've gone back to what Vladimir Lenin said: the way to crush the middle class is through taxation and inflation. And that is what we are seeing with these Democrat policies now. I don't think that this Democrat Party is the Democrat Party of JFK. And I really think that it is a small percentage that is driving this agenda. And they are trying to put it on warp speed, because I do think the American people are waking up, Ben.
Oh, exactly. And I think that's what we see right now. We see warp speed because, if we can somehow get to where we have fair elections, they're going to be swept from office, and they know that. And so they're trying to do what they can right now. That's my belief, and that's why you see things, like you said, being ratcheted up a notch or two today. It's something that we really have to be attuned to, and we have to really work hard to bring people into it. Let them know what's at stake right now. Most people say, it's just something that's happening in Washington. It's not going to bother us. But when we see all of these people coming into our country, not only from the Southern Hemisphere, but also from around the world, and we don't even know who they are. It's really crazy what we're seeing right now, and all of the things that are happening to us that most of us aren't aware of right now, because we're not seeing it. We know now that they're bringing in the people, illegals from the border, putting them in planes, putting them in buses sometimes, and flying them in the cover of darkness. And so when you're a mayor or somebody and you're a superintendent of schools or whatever, and you don't even know that you've got these people coming in, and it's going to really do a lot to what you normally do. It's changing the way you're operating. All of these things are being done, like you said. This is what you're talking about is force rather than freedom. You know, these folks are being forced into communities where the community doesn't even know and can't even prepare. And, you know, we talk about we're having, this terrible Chikung virus, attacking us right now, and that everybody has to be either fired or jabbed. And then we're sending all these people in that aren't even tested. We don't even know, you know, that they're sick or they have nefarious intentions in our, you know, they're, a lot of them, as we're seeing right now, are coming in. The ones that are being caught, and we find out that a high percentage of them are criminals that have already been here before and been deported before.
It is. We look at this, and the policies are really things that will hurt Americans, everyday hardworking Americans. I just want to mention one thing that Patty had pulled on the headlines. This is from the Epic Times. And the Biden administration announces vaccine rules for travelers into the U.S. But what it does, it says the first, it requires non-U.S. citizens traveling into the country. Who are not immigrants. Let me just read this again. Those U.S. citizens traveling into the country who are not immigrants are to be fully vaccinated against COVID-19 and provide proof of vaccination status prior to boarding their flight. Can you believe that, Ben? That immigrants...
No, I can't. Especially you're talking about double standards. So you're talking about people carving out special provisions or special privileges. I mean, that it's just crazy. I mean, we're putting the big squeeze on these people, and yet we're having, you know, what we're saying now, almost 2 million people have come through. Most of them haven't been checked or vaccinated.
It is truly, truly astounding. So, hey, Ben, we're going to go to break. We want to get into the American Revolutionary War, but Steve and I wanted to get your perspective on there are a number of similarities that are occurring right now. When I go through the Declaration of Independence, when it says there that, that he was going to send swarms, they're talking about King George and the usurpations. There's 27 usurpations, and one of them is that he's sending in swarms of officials to, here we go.
He's erected your substance.
Yeah, he's erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out our substance. That is the Patriots' way of talking about this new IRS, where they, I guess they're going, thought now is initially they were going to have banking regulations that banks had to report all transactions cumulative of $600 or more. They've changed that to $10,000. It doesn't matter what the amount is. It's none of their business. But that is directly, I think, the same as what happened during the Declaration of Independence and the Revolutionary War. But we're going to go to break. Ben Martin is online, and we're going to be talking about the Southern campaign in the Revolutionary War. Before we do that, though, I have these great sponsors, and one of those is Hooters Restaurants. They are great sponsors of both of our shows, and they have five locations, Lone Tree, Westminster, Aurora, Colorado Springs, and Loveland. And lunch specials Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., dine-in or to-go. And they have $8 items, $9 items, and $10 items. And in the $10 item range, there's their lunch, fish, and chips, which are just delicious. So check out all their specials at my website, kimmunson.com. That's M-O-N-S-O-N.com. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back with Ben Martin.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Thank you to all of you who support us. So appreciate that. Check out our voter's guide at Kim Munson. That's M-O-N-S-O-N.com. We are a strong no on Prop 119, that new marijuana tax for the children. Also a strong no on the Lone Tree 2E, which is the 55% increase in the retail sales tax rate here. And there's very few tax increases that I would support. The reason being is the way to increase tax revenue is to get government out of the way and just unleash the private sector. And then the pie gets bigger and bigger. And as the pie gets bigger, government revenues go up. And so be sure and check out my voter's guide there. On the line with me is Ben Martin. He is a patriotic historian, a former Army Ranger, as well as a West Point grad. We're talking about the American Revolutionary War. It's a series that we've been doing this year. And now we're talking about the Southern Campaign, the second part. Ben Martin, it's so exciting to talk about this. Where do you want to start?
Okay, Kim. Well, I really want to start, too. And I want to tell you that this is our Major General Greene, Nathaniel, is going to play a big part in this. Not so much at first. I mean, he's going to come in and save the day at the end of this, but then he becomes the Southern commander. So we'll talk about that and about all he does. And then I'll give you one of my favorite quotes of his after we get into this a little bit. So when we talked about this, the last time we were here, we talked at the very end of the program, we talked about the Battle of Monmouth Courthouse and how important it was. And, you know, we look at this and said, after the astounding American victory at Saratoga, where we won, an entire army was surrendered to us. You know, France was persuaded by the diplomacy of Ben Franklin to officially join the war effort on the American side. And we found that out in February of 1788. And General Howe, who was down in Philadelphia occupying at the time before he went back to New York City and then to Britain, he resigned his command of all of the British forces in North America in February. But he, you know, in that we knew that Clinton, General Henry Clinton, was going to take his place. He'd already been informed of that, but he wasn't given the official notification until later in the spring, but he already knew it. And then he was given orders that, hey, listen, I want you to get out of Philadelphia, get your troops back to New York City, to the safety of New York City. And he said, I want you to assume a defensive position in the north. And so, you know, he was really kind of worried, and he was thinking, okay, well, we know that there's a strong French fleet on its way over here to help us. And the British knew that too, and so they were, how do we get out of Philadelphia? We have all of these loyalists, all of these Tories, you know, these people that supported us living in Philadelphia, and just, you know, they were really happy we were there, but now we're leaving and they're worried. They're like refugees, you know, get me out of here, because when the American Patriots come back, we're going to be in big trouble. And so that was one of the big tasks that had to be performed by the British forces, to get these loyalists out of Philadelphia and get them either back to New York City or back to the mother country. And so how were they going to do that? They didn't have enough ships. They didn't have a big enough navy to take the soldiers and their equipment and all of these refugees, if you will, and all of their household goods back to New York City in one trip. And they knew they didn't have time to make two trips, because this French force was coming over. So they had to take a big risk, and they sent the loyalists, all of the civilians, back in the ships, and then they took the army over land. And they knew that that was going to cause a big problem for them, and it did at the Battle of Monmouth Courthouse. And it shocked them how well the American Army performed, how professional they were. And it really woke them up to, hey, you know, we can't take them for granted anymore. Of course, they should have known that from what happened at Princeton and what happened at Trenton, you know, the first and second battles of Trenton. Mm-hmm. And they kind of knew, but this kind of reaffirmed that, you know, even though we beat them in all these different battles in Philadelphia campaign, they're a lot different force than they were, you know, in 77. And so they were really worried. So in addition to all of this, you know, both Clinton and Washington were deliberating, what do we do next? General Clinton was surprised to find that a strong French fleet was coming over. And in fact, it almost got here if it hadn't been delayed, if they hadn't left so late over in France. They would have gotten here when the British were taking their ships back from New Jersey after they had marched up there and then taken them into New York City. They had to be transported that last stretch of the way by ship. And so the French fleet arrived just a little bit after they had done all this. So it was really scary for them. And so they were saying, so the Northern Theater now for Clinton was being told, hey, listen, you know, you go into a defensive position here. And he said, also, I want you to send 5,000 plus troops down to support British efforts in the West Indies. Oh, and I want you to send another 3,500 plus troops down to East Florida and Georgia to support the efforts that we're making down there. And this is going to be our new focus. We're going to go south. And so he was like, oh, what are we going to do here right now? You know, he says, they're taking all my forces away. And then all of a sudden, in addition to that, during the first days of August of 78, he receives intelligence that the American troops are massing to attack their protected safe harbor in Newport, Rhode Island, and that a French fleet was supporting their operations. So the French fleet is already here. So Clinton organizes a relief operation with 5,000 reinforcements and a strong fleet, and he sets sail to Newport, where they already have quite a few troops there. They have already had about 6,000 troops there. And now, and so Clinton has taken this force, his fleet, and he's putting 5,000 men on board to support the efforts in Newport, the defense of Newport. And Washington is really excited. He says, you know, we're going to finally get to coordinate with all these French. You know, it's going to be a land battle, and we're going to finally get some support from the Navy. And he said, so he was just looking forward to the opportunity to do this in Newport. And they had the plans all set. They had all the guys there. They'd actually sent General Greene and General Lafayette there to support General Sullivan in Newport. And this was all planned. It was all going to be coordinated. And then all of a sudden, these big storms hit, and they destroy both fleets, both the British fleet that's there under Admiral Howe and the French fleet that's there under Admiral D'Estaing. And so all of a sudden they have to go limping back. In fact, Admiral Howe leaves before the French admiral leaves, and he takes all of his ships back to New York City to get repaired. And so the French have to take their fleet up to Boston to get repaired. And so they kind of both go in different directions, but they're limping because their ships are so bad. And their French departure causes hard feelings between the French and the Americans, because the Americans think that the French have abandoned them. But in reality, it was the only thing that could be done, because neither fleet was battle ready. And so Clinton now turns his attention to focus on the South. and he has to send those 5,000 troops down to the West Indies and another 3,500 plus troops down to East Florida and Georgia to start taking care of business there. Yeah. And so the first thing that happens is an early part, or the last part of 78, of December 29th of 1778, those 3,600 troops, reinforcements go down that were sent by Clinton from New York City, and they help the forces down there that they already have.
Okay. I tell you what, Ben, yeah. Let's go to break as we get prepared to go into this now. Thank you for setting that up. And I can only really imagine if you were living during this time, just think about these different ports. And you see these British ships come back to New York and the French ships to Boston. And just think about the hubbub of what's going on. Just try to put yourself there. But let's go to break. We're talking with Ben Martin. This show is brought to you by the Harris family, who I so appreciate their sponsorship of the show. And it's important to understand our history because we need to reclaim these principles that were the great glorious cause of the American idea. Before we go to break, another great sponsor of both the shows is Kirsch Insurance Group. And Marlon Kirsch, Danielle, Naomi, the whole team over there is ready and willing to help you right now. This is the open enrollment period for Medicare, and it's important that you check your prescriptions and what that's going to look like on your plan next year in 2022. And so you can do this. They have an open time that you can do this. That's October 15th through December 2nd. And so get in touch with Kirsch Insurance Group to get a complimentary review and plan for success for 2022. Their website is iKirsch. That's iKirsch.com. That's iKirsch. KIRSCH.com, and reach out to them so that you can be prepared for success for 2022. We'll be right back with Ben Martin.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute, to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Be an informed voter. I'm Kim Munson, and I'm here to help. Be sure to check out my We the People Voters Guide at Kim Munson, that's MONSON.com.
Glory, glory, hallelujah.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who support us. We are an independent voice. We search for truth and clarity by looking at these issues through this lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something's a good idea, you shouldn't have to force people to do this. And this is our series that we've been doing this year on the American Revolutionary War with Ben Martin. The show is brought to you by the Harris family. We greatly appreciate them bringing these stories to the airwaves. Ben Martin, let's jump in here on the Revolutionary War, Southern Campaign, Part 2. You have this all teed up for us.
Sure do, Kim. So we left the Savannah is now under British hands. They had a good defense that was planned there. They had good terrain. They had obstacles on either side of them. And they thought that, you know, they had set up a defense where the British were attacking them, and that both of their flanks were secured, and they thought that they would be really great. But a slave that was there and did not like the Americans, of course, it would help told the British, it sort of sounds like Thermopylae in Greece, where they showed them a way around and what we also faced when we were at the Battle of Long Island, where they were shown a way around, and they attacked from the rear, and they won Savannah easily. And then they started this series of small battles as they were working their way up to Charleston. Charleston is the big prize that they're trying. And, of course, we remember General Clinton, when we were very first talking about, we started this program this year, one of the first programs that we did was about Clinton leading a force to go to Charleston, and he got waxed when he was there. And Clinton is really kind of spoiling to get back that and regain his reputation. And so these battles are going along, and, you know, they're being fought mostly down there. There are some British regulars, there's some British troops, but most of the battles are being fought by what the Americans call partisans. You know, they're the patriots that are down there, and then there are also a lot of loyalists down there, Tories that are coming from all over, you know, from as far away as New York City. Bands of Tories are going there to help fight this war, and so they go through these battles, and there's some very bad feelings because they're creating they're causing or they're committing atrocities on both sides. And that one of these battles, you know, most of all of these small battles are won by the British. And, you know, after Savannah, I have to tell you, first of all, after Savannah, in the big loss there, we replace the commander down there, who's actually, his name is also General Howe. But he's an American, and so we replace him, and Washington is pushing, you know, for, the, you know, he's going to Congress and saying, hey, we need to send General Greene down there. You know, Nathaniel Greene will take care of all of this. I can trust him. He can operate down there by himself. But they say, no, we're going to send General Gates down there. And of course, Washington knows what Gates has done, and Gates is not, although everybody calls him the hero of Saratoga, the people that were down there, Daniel Morgan was down there, and Benedict Arnold was down there, and Gates didn't even get out of the headquarters. He never joined any of the fights. He stayed in the rear the whole time. He never led any fights, and he condemned Benedict Arnold for being aggressive and going out there to win the battle. He said, no, we're just going to stay back here in a defensive position and let him come to us. And he said, no, we can't let him do that. We have to attack. And he and Daniel Morgan worked together, and they were the real heroes of the Battle of Saratoga. But so anyway, they send Gates down there. And we have already, in this battle that we had in Savannah, we lost a tremendous amount of morale. We lost a tremendous force. They had about 500 people were taken captive, and we lost all of our equipment and supplies down there. The cannon and everything were down there. And the same thing was happening in these little battles, and they were working their way to Charleston. And so they get to Charleston. And we have Lincoln is down there in Charleston, and Lincoln, Benjamin Lincoln, who is the general down there of the Southern Command. This is before, you know, I'm just going back a little bit because this is before they actually, before they send Gates down there, and he loses the battle of Charleston. It's a siege, and they're just really not as prepared as they were when they fought the Battle of Sullivan Island a few years ago at the start of the war. And so what they put them under siege, and then they start firing cannon into the city. They're held up in the city, and the cannon are doing great damage and causing lots of injury in the city, and so they give up. You know, they have to, because the city is being destroyed by the British cannon. And so we lose a whole army there. We lose 5,000-plus men. and we lose cannon and everything. I mean, it is just completely devastated. And so then they get rid of General Lincoln, and then they bring in Gates against Washington's, you know, adamant argument that, no, you can't bring this guy in. We need to send General Greene down there. But they don't. And so we have Gates go riding down there. It's amazing when you see the preparation that he made for this battle. He got the fastest horse that was in the land at the time, and that was his mount for this war. And as soon as things changed, because, you know, you've destroyed the Continental Army, the people that were really trained to fight, and you have a lot of partisans down there. The big thing that we did have in Continentals, and that really kind of kept it from the force from being completely destroyed, was this force that we had. It's a very small force, but it's the same force that stood their ground during the battle at Long Island. And these were these regulars, these Continentals that were from Delaware and Maryland, and they've been heroes throughout all of the Revolutionary War. And so they kept it, because after, when he comes down and he's ready, you know, he's the big hero and everything like that. And so they have a battle at Camden. And this Camden, he's brought some forces down from the north and some from Virginia, but he has a lot of partisans down there. He has a lot of militia down there. And the militia, a lot of them have rifles, which, you know, takes a long time to load. And they all bring their horses with them. That's the one thing about the partisans in the South, and especially in South Carolina and North Carolina, they have horses with them. And they tie their horses behind the fighting position, and if things get hot, they just take off. They go get on their horses, and they leave the battlefield. And so the British were... They had the British regulars down there, and they were, you know, they were fighting against the mostly militia, the partisans, and they couldn't stand up to this regular army, this well trained and well equipped regular army, and none of them, you know, none of the partisans had bayonets, and so the battle just. This was, you know, this was right afterwards. I mean, we're not talking about much time between what happened in Savannah and what happened in Charleston. And so they just crumble under the pressure. And what happens to our forces, the only thing that keeps the forces from being completely destroyed are those people from that regular group from Delaware and Maryland. And what does our leader do? What does the hero of Saratoga do? He leaves the battlefield before the battle has even been lost. But he sees it turning that way. That's why he has the fast horse. And he rides for 200 miles before he stops.
And this is, clarify, this is how, is that right? Or...
No, this is Gates. This is Horatio
Gates. Okay. Got it.
The hero of Saratoga. And Washington knows he's not a hero. Remember, if you remember back when the Battle of Trenton, when Washington was down there, and Gates never would come to his aid, and then he passed through the camp, and Washington said, hey, you know, we're getting ready to have this great attack. We're going to cross the Delaware River, and we're going to attack the British by surprise in Trenton. And Gates says, hey, I'm sorry, boss. He says, you know, I'm going, I don't want to be part of this. I'll leave my soldiers here, and you can use them as you want. I'm going to Philadelphia to talk to Congress. And and he's done that over and over and over again. Washington knows what kind of guy he is. And, of course, Washington was close, has always been close with Daniel Morgan, and he was close with Benedict Arnold, and he said, you know, I know he's not going to be able to hold up. And so that's exactly what happens. And so he is relieved. He is relieved of duties down there. Gates is. He's already, you know, close to Philadelphia before they get the orders to him that he's relieved. And Washington then says, see, I, you know, Washington is too kind and noble to do that. But this was a good "I told you so" kind of moment, where mm-hmm. he could have said that if he wanted to, but then they acquiesced and said, "Okay, you can send Green down there now, like you wanted to." And so that's what happens next, and I'll set that up for our next segment.
Okay, sounds great. Let's go to break. And before we do that, though, I wanted to give a shout out again to another great partner of both the shows, Castlegate Knife and Tool. Hal and Linnea Van Herke are the owners. They're entrepreneurs. It's a great family-owned business located in Sedalia. And would highly recommend to take a road trip down to Sedalia and check it out. And but if not, they have a great website. That's castlegate.com. They are getting in inventory in preparation for the Christmas season. I can't believe Christmas is just right around the corner. So get your shopping done early. So whether or not you're shopping for a chef, a sportsman, a collector, Castlegate Knife and Tools, the place for you. So be sure and check that out. They do have knife sharpening as well. And so you may have that great knife that needs to be sharpened just a little bit, and Castlegate Knife and Tool can do that for you as well. We'll be right back with Ben Martin. This show is our American Revolutionary show. Great to understand our history. It's brought to you by the Harris family. We'll be right back.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
His truth is mine.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Thank you to all of you who support us. I so appreciate that. Our voter's guide is there. We are a strong no on Prop 119, which is that new marijuana tax for the children. And then these local tax increases, there's very few of those that I would support as well. As Vladimir Lenin said, the way to crush the middle class is through taxation and inflation. So we need to keep taxes low so that we can unleash the private sector. And when the private sector is doing well, actually government revenue does go up. On the line with me is Ben Martin. We're talking about our history, the American Revolutionary War, the Southern Campaign, Part 2. This show is brought to you by the Harris family, so appreciate that. Okay, Ben, we're in our final segment here. And Horatio Gates has been relieved of his command. And so what's going to happen now?
So Nathaniel Green goes down, and he takes with him Daniel Morgan, who was the real hero. He was one of the two heroes of Saratoga. And so he takes him down with him, and they're good friends. They've been working together. They trust each other. And this is going to be a great time. So they go down there. Right after the Battle of Camden, where we lose this army, and we have this escort that's trying to get the governor of South Carolina out of the state because it's too dangerous for him to be here, and they're looking for him to take him prisoner. The British are looking for him. So this escort force, this guy's named Colonel Buford, he's taking him out of the state. And they get caught by a tarlatan, the Bannister tarlatan, you know, the bloody band. He gets caught, and I told you they're having all these atrocities back and forth. So they get caught at a place called Waxhaws, which is just north of Camden. And they get caught by these people, by Bannister's cavalry. Really is mostly what he has, but he does have light infantry with him, and he does carry these field cannons. Anyway, they're totally outgunned and outmanned, and so they're completely surrounded by a superior force of men that Bannister Tarleton has, and so they surrender. Now they see the Tarleton's coming, and they get an escort, and they get the governor away, and so the soldiers are there to hold Bannister from following the governor, and the governor escapes with the small force that they send with him. And then they see that they're just overwhelmed, and so they surrender. And their surrender was met with their sabers and their pistols, and they killed the people that were trying to surrender. And so I'm telling you, the tensions are really getting bad.
Sure,
and
you can only imagine.
And the atrocities are getting bad. So that was another victory for the British. And so the British win battle after battle, and then they have this one guy named Patrick Ferguson. Now, Patrick Ferguson is still a major, but he is a really bright guy. He's a strong leader, and he's the guy that, you know, way back when had developed a breech-loading rifle. And it's called the Ferguson rifle because, you know, he basically put it together. So he goes to the back country, over the mountain gang, and he challenges them. You know, he's out there, and he's pretty arrogant by now because he's won all these battles. And he says, you know, you guys come get me. He says, there's nobody here that can stand up to my force. And, of course, you know, when somebody does that, they're just asking for it. And so they catch him at this place called King's Mountain, which is in the northern part of South Carolina. And what the general that's down there commanding the forces in South Carolina for the British is Cornwallis. And Cornwallis has Bannister with him. And so they go down, and so what happens is Greene goes down there, and Greene's got a smaller army by a long shot than Cornwallis has, and they're not trained or anything like that. And so he does something that nobody thinks he should do. You know, this violates all military principle. He divides his smaller force right in front of Cornwallis, and he sends Daniel Morgan off to the west so that he crosses basically in front of the forces that Cornwallis has. And Cornwallis is just like, he couldn't believe it. So he sends Tarleton, the bloody band, he sends him after him with his elite force to go get Morgan. And Daniel Morgan is this backwoods rifleman. He knows what he's doing. He's one of the best commanders. And this is one of the best battles that has ever been planned and fought in the American Army, and it's at Camp Cowpens. And he knows, Morgan knows how far back Bannister is. And so Bloody Band keeps getting closer and closer. He's wearing his guys out, and he's planning. Morgan is planning for where he's going to stop and he's going to fight. And so he fights at this place called the Cowpens, which is where when the farmers or the ranchers bring their cattle before they're bringing them to market, they bring in the cowpens and they eat. And it's not like the cowpens we see on the side of the railroad. This is just open fields and with some trees there. So Morgan sees all this, and so he plans. He brings these people in. He's got it so well planned. He knows how to use riflemen. He knows how to use the militia, and he knows how to use his Continental Army, the ones, like I told you, that were from Maryland and Delaware. And so he sets them into three different lines, and then Bannister attacks with his cavalry first, which is really not the right thing normally to do. But he does that because Bannister has been marching his men all night. I mean, he's been marching them for several days, but for this last thing, he pushes really hard. He marches them through the night, and so they're going to attack in the morning. And Morgan has already had his guys there the night before. They're well fed. They're sleeping in the same positions in which they're going to fight. And Morgan has not slept a wink. He's gone around and talked to all the different guys to make sure they all understand what the plan is. And so when Bannister attacks at the first light in the morning, his guys, Morgan's guys, are all fed. They're nice. They've been sleeping all night, and they know what the plan is. And so Bannister sends his cavalry first forward, and Morgan has his riflemen there. And he takes out a good portion of his cavalry at long range, and so it stops him. And then he says, okay, I'm going to send in my main force. And so Bannister starts sending in his main force, and the riflemen keep engaging as they're moving back. And then they look like they're retreating, and they run through the lines of the militia that's set in place. And then the militia is set in the normal line, and they have muskets, and they fire. And Morgan says, all I ask you is to fire two shots, and then you can leave. And so they fire their shots, and they're very effective because they wait, and then they go back through the line. They already know they're going to do that. They go back through the main line of the Continental Army, the Delaware and Maryland guys. And then so Bannister's guys keep hitting wall after wall, and then they come to this final wall. And in the meantime, the army, the partisans have gone around behind them and behind this hill, and they've gone around to the left side of the army of the Americans, and they're going around this hill, and they're going to come around to the right. And so then the final force starts attacking, and then they get a mix-up. The Americans get a mix-up in their command, and so they turn around instead of turning to the side, and it looks like they're retreating.
Okay. Hey, Ben Martin, we are out of time. Just 10 seconds, wrap up. We won this, right?
We won this. They come and they attack, and then the Americans are in a death lead, and they're ready, and they fire, and then the militia comes around to the side, and George Washington's cousin is leading the cavalry, and he comes around, so they attack him, and then they go around to the back, and they completely surround him. They completely capture this force, and they take away Cornwallis's best force. And
wow, I tell you what, Ben Martin, the Battle of Cowpens gives me so much heart today. So my friends, our quote for today is from Nathaniel Green, and this is what he said. He said that we fight, we get beat, we rise, and we fight again. So my friends today,
right,
be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America.